This is The Think Tank, talking about the major political, economic, and social issues of the week. With Dr. Mike O'Neill and hosted by Mike Russell. KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com. The Think Tank.
Okay, very special back to school issue in the think tank, Mike. Put on
Here we go.
Get ready to work, Mike.
Thank goodness we got back to school.
We have a very interesting guest for our opening segment. Her name is Kathy Small. She is a professor at NAU, professor of anthropology, and she did a most interesting thing. It's called participant observation, but in layman's terms, what she did was to take a leave from her teaching responsibilities and enrolled as a student.
What?
And lived in a dorm and wrote a book about it. The book is called My Freshman Year. It is under a pseudonym of Rebecca Nathan, you have, since the publication of the book, your identity has become public. And welcome to the Think Tank.
Thanks very much.
Well, tell us, you lived amongst this strange group of human beings known as college students. What did you learn about student culture?
Well, I went into it because I felt I no longer connected with my students. I no longer understood what they did, why they ate in my class and didn't come to office hours and didn't do the reading I assigned. And I felt I was losing touch with who my students were. And so I did this really to walk a year in their shoes and see if I could better understand things from their perspective. And one of the most surprising things to me is that I ended up doing many of the same things that my students did.
Nice.
Such as?
Living in their shoes for that year. I saw the stress and the, I experienced it taking five classes from five different people who were asking for five different sets of things and formats for submitting it and asking to be in clubs, in volunteer groups, and in these classes. And what I found is that I ended up doing many of the same things and realizing that the students really were not so different in their generation or from me, and that I just needed to see it a little bit more closely through their experience.
So what you found out basically is that when we look back at the younger generation, we think, oh, kids these days, I'll tell you, they're just...
Exactly.
Yeah, but what you found out is we're just getting older, but pretty much we'd do the same thing if we were in their shoes.
That's really what I found. It doesn't mean that I don't have some advice for them. I did see things from my standpoint as an educator and a professor that I would say, here's advice I would give freshmen. But I certainly found, much to my surprise, that I was really quite similar and that I don't have that kids today rhetoric anymore.
What would you? You've got an opportunity now. You're probably talking to more parents than kids. But how would you summarize what you learned in terms of advice to kids?
Well, there's a few things. The first thing is to expect the initial overwhelm and stress. Sometimes, especially in the first month, students think, and there's a lot of students who think this, I picked the wrong place. This isn't working for me. This is very common because there is an overwhelm factor that happens in that first year as you're trying to negotiate all this and you're also out of your parents' home. You don't have the support of even laundry. It changes your life, and many students feel like they want to leave. So I would say hang in there, go to class. That's one of the things. Don't because of the stress start leaving class, because that will be the road to your demise. Get help early if you're having problems, and use your peers. Use peer groups to do things like study and get together. So that early stress. The other thing that I found is that, you know, I was surprised in our orientation periods. There's lots of students from different walks of life, from different nationalities, from different ethnic groups. And there was much more coming together of that difference in the pre-class period than in the post-class period. And that's surprising. And that's really because students begin in their discomfort, they end up finding their own or the people who seem most comfortable to them. And one of the things I saw is when I did interviews with students is that the groups that they maintained social and academic connections with didn't change a whole lot from their freshman year. So if a student is coming to school to get a different point of view and to make connections with different kind of people than were in their high school, they should make an effort early. It's really in the freshman year that that their friendship groups are going to be formed.
We have just a couple minutes here, so let me ask you this: What as a professor, after doing this experiment and writing the book My Freshman Year, What a Professor Learned by Becoming a Student, what have you lightened up on?
Well, I make my rules more individualized rather than these syllabi that look like legal documents that look like 30-page contracts. I found that there's a lot of different situations and that you kind of have to be willing to give students the benefit of the doubt. I've done many more things with trying to connect my classes to their lives outside, because one of the other things I found was the big separation between academic and social life. And so I've designed new kinds of classes that, for instance, half of my class will be U.S. born and half of the class will be from China or Korea. Or different years, different other countries. And that some of the assignments have to do with going on each other's Facebook pages, meeting parents on Skype and learning how to speak with them, going to a movie together and analyzing it, doing things that combine the academic and the social so that the academic doesn't become so separate from what they think their lives are.
Interesting. We're talking to Kathy Small. She's the author of My Freshman Year, What a Professor Learned by Becoming a Student. It's under the nom de plume. See, I can even go in different languages here.
I'm impressed.
Under Rebecca Nathan. If you can stick with us after the break, we want to dig more into this fascinating story. Once again, the author of My Freshman Year, What a Professor Learned by Becoming a Student. What is happening, Pablo? What is playing now? I don't know. What is this? I know this is a Doc O'Neill thing.
This is a tribute to education.
A tribute to education. Okay, stay with us right here on the Think Tank, KTAR News.
Look what they done to my soul.
The Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
We are back with Kathy Small, author of My Freshman Year. She was a professor, is a professor, who spent a year posing as a freshman. It was interesting, was concealed somewhat lightly. You used the name Anyu, A-N-Y-U.
Yes, I did.
Nice. I thought.
And to tell you the truth, when I did this, I really didn't posed as a freshman. I mean, I was in my 50s, so it was clear that I was a returning student,
okay.
And I wasn't, you know, I wasn't a freshman, and I used my real name when I interacted with students. It was just to write the book that I changed my name so that the university or the people who were on my floor wouldn't be implicated.
Sure. And of course you use the name NEU and yeah. you're a faculty member at NEU. This is sort of like the name you use when you want to get caught.
Well, it was the name I used if I wanted to be on the radio, and I didn't want to make a mistake.
Nice.
question, and there's a little bit of a disconnect between the earlier conversation and some of the things that I read. I read a whole lot in this about organized systems by students to avoid tough classes, how to figure out how to avoid tough classes, and things of that sort.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about that, because that's some of the stuff that stuck in my mind.
Well, and that was the other insight that we haven't gotten to yet that would be my advice to freshmen. One of the things I found, and it came out of, you know, as a professor, and I'm an anthropology professor, so I talk about other cultures a lot, and one of the things I talk about is witchcraft. And I talk to people about how in various societies, the witches, even though people don't consciously do this, the way they choose witches is someone who goes against the norms of the society. And people say, you know, and it's a lecture, and they get that. And then I turn around and I say, you know, the same thing happens right in our classroom. So what I'd like you to do, and it's a classroom of 100 people, they don't know one another, is stand up, say your first name and your last initial, and I'd like the whole class individually, and you're going to send it in a secret ballot, you're going to pick 3 people who are the witches in the class.
Wow.
And what's surprising to me is that every year people pick, you know, 50 people in the class will pick one particular student or 2 particular students. And of course, I contact them before to talk to them about this and ask if it's okay to discuss it. And usually by the end, they're proud of that. Because what it shows, what they pick, is the students who speak the most, the students who other students think are getting an A.
In other words, they're breaking the norm.
Yes. They're breaking the expected norm. And why would that be? Why would college be the place where the people who are getting A's who say something in class are chosen as the witches rather than the students who don't say something? And so I try to get them to see that really what's happening is that there's a norm of anti-intellectualism, okay, that's going on. And I think that once students see it, they're able to more easily break the norm. It's just that it's unconscious.
You're trying to legitimate breaking that norm, which is a destructive one. And one of the most shocking things in the book to me was the point at which, in an informal interview, you ask students if the university would hand out, and I'm quoting this almost exactly, would hand out a degree right now, provided you left the dorm, would you take the degree and leave? And
okay, so 79% of those students, and this surprises many faculty members, say no.
What?
They would not. Yes.
Really?
79% say no.
I am out of here. I'm on the other side of that fence, by the way. I'm gone. Hand me that diploma.
21%, you're the 1 in 5 who would take it. Okay? The rub is, okay, even though 4 out of 5 students say, I would stay there. I came to school to learn. But when I ask them, where is the learning occur? Okay, where is the learning that's occurring? 65% of the learning, and this is median when I ask lots of students, 65% of the learning happens outside of the classroom. 35% happens inside of the classroom.
Why do you think that is? What did they give examples of what they were talking about? Because obviously I'm not learning anything about physics outside of the classroom.
Yeah, but they're learning about life. They're learning about, it may be an internship. It may be at work. It may be in a club, in the co-curriculum. It may be in other things. And what they say is that the classes in which they learn most are the ones in which they connect to the real world, so that there's some kind of a trips or internships or things that the class does on an outside basis, service learning, those are the classes that they say they learn the most in. And that's one of the reasons that I've shifted some of my classes, actually most of my classes, to have that inside-outside component.
Yeah, I've seen that's always been a theme, you know. Give me real world stuff. But to me, that also denigrates the academic component of college and pretends that there's really nothing there of value.
Well, it's 65-35 for students, and I think it's not that it's that they see the way in which academic thinking and principles that you can get through the academic side help you in practical kinds of things, in real world things. I think that is part of is what we're after. So, because what you're saying too, which I totally agree with, is that education should not just be job training. It shouldn't just be about the things that they're going to be doing in the world. And that's really clear because the jobs that they're going to have, we don't even know the jobs they're going to have. We can't possibly train people for the jobs they're going to have in 5 years or 10 years.
Because those jobs may not exist.
Right. Exactly.
And it's not just one
mold. But what we can do is offer them insights into ways of thinking and ways of finding things out and ways of questioning their assumptions that will be useful in any any job they're in.
Well, Professor, we appreciate you spending some time with us. She's the author of My Freshman Year, What a Professor Learned by Becoming a Student. Absolutely fascinating. She went undercover. Deep, 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 deep undercover as a freshman at NEU. Yeah, NEU. I like that. Thank you so much for spending time with us. We appreciate it.
My pleasure.
All right, Doc and I come back. We're going to get in this debate. We're going to talk about, is college worth it? Do we keep taking the next steps? Next.
The Think Tank. KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
The book was My Freshman Year, What a Professor Learned by Becoming a Student. And it's the author's nom de plume is Rebecca Nathan. She went undercover. A professor went undercover as a freshman at her very own university and learned some amazing things. What an amazing book. You can check that out at Amazon and everywhere you buy books. My Freshman Year, What a Professor Learned by Becoming a Student, which begs the question. You know what that reminds me of? That movie, I Never Been Kissed. Remember that with Drew Barrymore? She was a reporter, and she went back to high school. Yeah, or anything on 21 Jump Street. Anyway, so you're very 20.
High culture in here.
Hey, come on. How long have we done radio together? You know me, buddy. So listen, let's get into this debate because you and I know we differ here. You being the PhD having guy and me being the non-college degree having guy.
Let me first take a cut. I read sections of this book that she, I think over the years, has learned to soft pedal, because I read in that whole sections about work avoidance, about the absolute minimal importance of academics. Mm-hmm. My read of that question, there were a huge number of people, and I just reread that section last night, and I didn't see. I saw huge numbers who were saying, the reason, I think she characterized a little bit, the reason I wouldn't leave here if they would offer me the degree, they put it in terms of what, and miss the party?
Yes.
You know?
That was my first thought. My first thought in that was, if anyone wants to stay in college, there's a reason why they want to stay. And it isn't because they want to learn about human sexuality. They want to go party. The extracurricular kind of stuff.
It's not biophysics.
right, thank you.
And of course, you're not your wide brush here. This is not everybody, but it's a lot.
It is. Okay? It's a majority.
And that'll take me, by the way, and that is a perfect bridge, I think, to the question of, is college worth it? And I'll give you a little precursor to my answer. I think the answer is going to be it depends.
All right.
And I want to tell you, there's all sorts of people. They get out. They take the norm from 40, 50 years ago. Well, if you get a degree, your life is set.
Right.
And I think now that doesn't quite cut it.
You get that job at Ford, you get that job at GE, right, and then you're just going to be
coasting. You get that degree, and you didn't learn anything because you partied the whole time, and you're in for a rude awakening that job isn't worth it.
Right.
Okay, it depends. Now, on the other hand, and this is a little anecdote, but it's a personal one, very good friend of mine, I know the young lady very well, took a summer internship. Mm-hmm. She finished her freshman year. She took a summer internship,
okay,
$10 an hour. At the end of the summer.
That's a paying internship. That's good stuff.
$10 an hour. Was called in at the end of the summer by the president of the company and said, we'd like to keep you here.
Nice.
You don't have to go back to college. We'll pay you $100,000 a year and stock options.
Yep, sign me up.
Okay.
Right. I like it.
Now, this is a bright kid.
Okay. Right.
This is also not in Phoenix.
Okay.
That's another matter about our job structure. What that says is what's possible if you're good enough.
Sure.
Okay. And this employer is also not impressed by the degree. Conversely, somebody comes in and says, well, I got a degree. The first question, well, that's wonderful. Your mom's proud of you, I'm sure.
Yeah.
What can you do?
Right.
What actual, basically, let me deal with this statistic. You know, you will see this often touted that college graduates earn in their lifetime between $1 and $2 billion.
We see this all the time, yes.
Let me tell you the fallacy of that.
Thank you.
While the core number is true, this is sort of a lot like the men-women differential.
Sure.
But I don't want to sidetrack.
Yeah, let's not get into that today.
But if you have two piles, one pile is all the college graduates in the world. The other is all the non-college graduates in the world. Those two groups are going to differ on about four or five dimensions. One, on average, not every individual, but on average, the college-educated group is going to be a little smarter. They're going to be a little more motivated. They're going to come from wealthier families with more opportunities. And then, yes, they also have a degree, and they may have learned something. It may or may not have learned something in college.
Sure.
So you've got five things that differentiate those two groups. So what that means is you cannot attribute the difference in income to one of those things, which is you got a degree.
Right.
It's all
those
things. Yes. And one of the big things is how much did you learn more than the degree? 50 years ago, the degree was your entree ticket into a middle-class life, and now it doesn't quite cut it.
But what is it if you're going to look into it like that? If you're going to look into somebody smarter?
Mm-hmm.
Go back to your anecdote that you had a little earlier. Yeah. Somebody smarter. Somebody without a degree that was just interning there and showed some skills and actually knew something about that specific job. That person is smarter
and doesn't
in
have,
that sense.
It was the smarts that mattered.
It was smarter in that sense than the one coming out of coming out of academia and just saying, hey, look at me. I want to work here. I've got a degree. I want the $100,000 a year, the $100,000 in stock options. Then you're not that one smarter. The first one's smarter.
Actually, it's more than smart. She also had I know how she had worked. I know the level of work this young lady was doing in high school.
Yeah.
She had also acquired some skills. Mm-hmm. She didn't have the sheepskin to credentialize.
Yes.
But this was a high-tech industry where basically people have learned not to care about that.
Right.
It's what can you do? What can you produce? They had 8 weeks to see what she could do, and they were wowed.
Right.
Okay. So this is the fallacy that, you know, yes, college for most people, particularly for people in the middle doing sort of average, above average work, is a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
But you also have to learn something. But it's not in and of itself. It's you got all of those five things. Your smartness, you can develop it. Your skills, you sure as heck can improve. Your wealth and family connections, well, you're pretty much born with that. You're stuck with that. The degree, a piece of paper, in some cases, probably some marginal benefit, because if somebody doesn't know what you can do, in some places, it'll give you help. But you've got five of those things going on. And so bottom line, is college worth it? Here would be my judgment. I've seen a lot of research in this. If you're in the bottom 25%, you're sort of where a high school CD student, you go to college. A traditional college is probably not going to do a whole. You're going to get stuck with some student debt. You're losing the earning capacity of those years when you're not working. And you'd probably be better off in some sort of developing a skill. If you're in the top, an A student, you know, and then this is A student. I'm using that as a metaphor for, you know, being at the top. It's not exactly grade point. If you're at the top, pursue your dreams, major in philosophy if you want, if that excites you. Aim for in what Kathy Small talked about. Get education, not training. You will adapt to whatever you need. The skills you need for the, yeah, you do not.
I don't know. I don't know if I agree with that. I'm going to push back on that.
Yeah, well.
I'll push back.
I will. I mean, we had here when you were, your interview coming up next month with Fife Simonton.
Sure.
Was a major in Dutch art history.
Okay,
he
right.
did pretty well. He's a very smart
Dutch,
guy. Okay.
Dutch art history.
In other words,
I would disqualify him for picking that major.
Well,
that's
okay.
all. You're too cute.
Well, he was a big time developer. He was elected governor of Arizona, and that is an anecdote.
Life did okay.
But the point is, if you're really, really good enough, if you're at the top of your game, you can find applicate. Because what you do in college, really at that level, is you learn how to think, you learn how to learn. If you're a middle student, sort of a metaphorically a B student, college is going to be worth it, and you probably should focus a little bit more on what the practical applications are. I think there's three groups of people, and I think the answer is a little bit different for them. I mean, the top group, I can tell you, having hired and worked with, I had people who picked stuff up and self-taught in 15 minutes
sure.
that I took me 5 years to get somebody else to train because I had to show them 100 times.
Sure.
If you're in the first group,
but if you're going to throw it all in there, well, college is worth it.
Yeah.
College is worth it. College is not worth it. Here's what I'd say. It's subjective because for every single individual, like my two kids, of course, I want them to go to some sort of, and I'm not that parent. You will go to college. Mm-hmm. You will have some learning past high school. That's what, whether it's a trade school, whatever it is, you will get some sort of knowledge outside mm-hmm. of high school. College is not for everyone. Kyle, so if you say it's worth it and not worth it, who are you talking about?
Exactly, Mike.
Who are you talking about?
I think we're agreeing here,
what it requires
on the front end is an honest assessment of which one of those three groups are you in. If you went through high school, you basically got minimal reading, writing skills. You're just barely getting sort of socially promoted. It's really unlikely that a traditional liberal arts college education is going to do something for you. If you persevere, you can probably get a degree, but you're probably at the back end of it going to find you're very disappointed in what it gets you.
Here's what I'm going to ask Doc when we come back. I'm going to ask Doc a little bit about why truly people do go to college. Why? Why in the world? It's not school's out. Man, I wish school's out. Yeah, it's party right here on Think Tank.
Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
I think I've said it enough in my 4 years here at KTAR that I'm very proud of this and where I've become, what I've become, what I'm doing, that I don't have a college degree. It's not something that I celebrate, but I'm definitely not shying away from it. And we're talking this week about college. We're talking about upper education. We're talking about, is it worth it? Is it not worth it? Earlier in the show, we had the author of My Freshman Year, What a Professor Learned by Becoming a Student by Rebecca Nathan. You got to check that book out. Absolutely amazing read. She went undercover, which was pretty cool. Me, I really don't think college is worth it. And here's why I'm going to say that. I've seen enough college students today. And it's not a kids these days things. It's just I see them. I see them come in here at KTR and apply for internships. I see them come here and apply for jobs. I see them in the events that we do. They're there for one of the reasons that author Rebecca Nathan was talking a little bit earlier. They're there if you handed them a degree. If you said, I can hand you a degree, move out of the dorms today, you're gone, here's your degree, move on. The majority of them said no. And the reason why, the number one reason, ding, 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 they wanted to do what? They wanted to, Doc, you got to turn your mic up over there, buddy. There you go. They wanted to stay for the party.
I don't want to miss the party.
And
I agree with, and that's sort of my answer to that is a little bit more nuanced. If that's what you're there for, you may very well be disappointed at what you can, you know, and I've seen this in a lot of, yeah, people go through there, they party for 4 years.
Yeah.
There's social promotion, so you walk out, you got a degree, you haven't learned much of anything, and then you feel cheated when the world doesn't open up for you because you have a degree. Well, 50 years ago, the reason why I think that persists is, number one, 50 years ago, that degree would get you somewhere. It doesn't cut it anymore.
by itself. Mm-hmm. Number two, there is all these figures like the $1 to $2 million in lifetime earnings, which is absolutely misunderstood because it's not just the degree; it's four other things that we talked about as well.
Okay, and it's also the degree you choose. So if I'm one of those people that just partied the entire time and graduated with a communications degree, right? Okay. Or I graduated with a liberal arts degree or a geology degree, something like that. By the way, I was actually talking to one of the SeaWorld trainers.
Yeah.
She said, I have a geology degree. I don't know how I landed here.
There's but also anyway. A lot of geology degrees that go work for oil companies.
Absolutely. So but hear me out here. So if I'm one of those people, I graduate. My degree means nothing because I have nothing to apply to any job that I'm mm-hmm. going to. I have nothing to add to that job. I just have communication education. Yeah. That really means nothing in this world. If you go to college for a specific thing, engineering, name any of those, mm-hmm. by the way, engineering, medical field, whatever it is, if it's specific and it's marketable, yes, absolutely. College is worth it. If your desire is to get a good job out of school, bang, you've done it.
My take on that, yes, if you're in the middle of the student group. If you're at the top, I wouldn't worry about it. I'll take a philosophy major. I've hired him. Okay. You learn to think. If you're good, if you're really, really good. Not just if you took it
Who
because engineering
that,
was too hard.
Who asked that? I've been on interviews. I have conducted interviews. They say, oh, look at you. You got a degree from Arizona State University. Okay, great. Oh, it's in communications. Great. Let's go to your experience.
Yep.
They don't say, where did you graduate? Where in your class did you graduate? What was your no one's asking that. Mm-hmm. No one's asking that in interviews these days.
I'll tell you, I had an intern once who came in. She was an English major, okay? I'm an eye for talent. Immediately grasped that she was capable of professional level work. Now, by the way, she was an English major who also was very conversant with higher level mathematics. It just didn't interest her as
okay.
much. Started functioning within a matter of weeks as a upper level professional. She was just that smart. She was a lot like the gal that I mentioned
right.
who got the other job. If you're really top of your game, the people who what they learn and this is the liberal arts thing. Mm-hmm. If you really learn what you're really getting is not the for Fife Symington, it wasn't the specific knowledge of Dutch art history. It's learning how to think, learning how to assimilate things and how to process things is adaptable into other circumstances. And that's what Kathy Small was saying at the end when she's saying, don't train for a specific job because that job doesn't exist. It's generic kinds of skills. You get to the point.
No, she was saying that she can't teach to a specific job.
Mm-hmm.
So she because yes. you were talking about does the real world versus the classroom, does that mm-hmm. kind of negate what we're doing in the classroom. What she was saying is we can't teach to one specific job because I got 100 kids in my class and all of them are going to have different kinds of jobs.
Mm-hmm.
So that was what she was getting at with that, I believe, right?
Well, I think it's also, look, she's an anthropologist. You're talking about learning how different cultures interact and getting to understand and recognize things that come from different cultural backgrounds. That is an attribute that's going to help you in life if you get that conceptually, you're going to be a better manager. You're gonna deal with people more effectively.
Yeah. Okay. So. And I agree with that. But here's the deal. I would take Let's say I'm going to give it 90%. I'm going to get 9 out of 10. If I'm the HR director,
yeah.
And I see degree in one hand. And by the way, I'm helping a friend of ours right now, just graduated UC Boulder, and he a business degree. And the kid has no real world, no work experience,
mm-hmm.
none. He was like a swim coach and this and that. This is really it. You can work with kids. Yay. That's about it. I would take the one that spent those 4 years and busted tail at 5 different jobs.
Yep.
That's what I want to see. That's the person I want working in my
first advice would be, first of all, try to avoid the HR director. They tend to be the people who are looking for check-off boxes, you know. Has degree in this,
right.
has this experience. You know, sure. They're not thinking like somebody who's actually going to use you. Let me use an anecdote to deal with this. I did a recent hire. I was looking for a computer person, and I put out this for my company, O'Neill Associates, mm-hmm. and I put out a very, very specific job. I want somebody who can do the following 4 things. And I wrote it up, actually sent it to Barrett, the Honors College at ASU, because I know that those are the top students. Those are the, you know, top of the heap. And I said, I want somebody who can do these four things. Your job application is write me a sentence or two about each of these four things and tell me what you could do. This is apropos the issue of how not to apply for a job. I got one amusing response from somebody who said, well, do you have to be a Barrett student? I wrote back and said, you know, I found that to be a very good pond to fish in, but it's not absolute. And she writes back and says, well, what if the candidate had a master's degree, work experience, and was 32 years old? And I thought about it, and I said, I asked for response to four things. This tells me about none of these.
Right.
So I thought about this, and I said, how do I respond to this? And so I wrote back a terse little note, and I said, well, none of those things would disqualify you.
Nicely done. Well stated.
And what I got back was a big, fat resume with a lot of gobbledygook computer stuff that I couldn't understand. And I responded to that and said, you know, I asked for four things.
Yeah, four things. All I want.
Second, the person I hired sent back a little short email with about a sentence or two about each of the four things. She was a Barrett student, clearly had done it. I called her on the phone 5 minutes into it. I said, listen, there's no point in a job interview. I want to know when you can start.
Nicely done.
And because, you know, pay attention to what someone's looking. Now, if you're going, you're not going to get that in an HR department. And they're going to be impressed by the master's degree or something else that may or may not be relevant.
Now, I'm going to say this when you talk about interviewing. And we went back to when we were talking to Professor Small a little earlier. Is kids want, and when I say kids, I'm talking about colleges. They're adults, excuse me. So college students want real world. They want life coaching. They're looking for coaching is what they're looking for. Okay. They're not looking to see which came first, Socrates, Plato, or Aristotle. They came in that order, by the way. That's how I know. So they're not looking for that. They're looking for how in the world do I find an apartment? They're looking for, please just teach me how to be good at life and not suck at life. That's what college students want to know. So in saying that, I think a university that rises to the top is one that actually has stuff like we just talked about. You're not graduating, you're not getting your diploma. I don't care what you have it in until you take an interview class. Until you take a full class on interviewing, one full semester, 3 credits. It's not even elective. This is mandatory. You actually learn how to go on a job interview. Can you imagine the benefits that would be they would have for the students and for the university moving forward? Because their people will probably get hired.
Oh, my God. I don't know. I've interviewed so many people who obviously got coached in that, and they're so predictable. And first thing I try
you're
to tell
being
them is
a snob.
Well, I'll tell you what it is. The first thing I say to people is, listen, the worst outcome for you is not that you don't get the job.
Right.
The worst outcome for you is that I hire you, you take the job, and it's the wrong fit.
Right.
So I said,
well, that
I
could
try
be
to say,
part of
be
a class.
Honest. Be we're honest. You know,
that's part of we're talking. Not just be a robot. No. Here's how to get the job. I'm talking about a real world.
We're
even
near the end.
Recognize.
Let me give you my big takeaway on this. I know we're running out of time.
Here we go.
Be honest about where you sit on this scale, or sort of the ABC thing. If you're really haven't got the background to take advantage of it, think of something other than traditional college. I'm not against other training, but if you're at the top of your game, don't worry about practicality.
Get some education. I don't care what it is. Get some after high school. Make it happen. Whether it's Hard Knocks or the other kind, make it happen. All right. Hey, on behalf of Doc O'Neill, I'm Mike Russell. Thanks for being here in the Think Tank. KTAR News.